And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
After talking over my coaches and my family, I would like to announce that I'm declaring for the 2018 NBA Draft.
We did not raise our ticket prices this year, despite going to a bowl game last year. We need more people back at Faurot Field. I'm afraid UConn.
Dangerfield knocks it down at the end of the quarter.
We got beat by a really good UConn team. All is well in women's basketball.
Samuelson with a chance at a four-point play.
Mistakes. And that's what we've seen from South Carolina.
Look at the stat sheet in the first half. You shoot 56% and you're down by 21. Do you just shake your head and not really know what to do?
Yeah.
Deep three on the money. Mabry has hit two of those bombs.
I thought they played well.
And he scores! The banker! And the Sharks keep their streak alive.
It wasn't pretty for a lot of it.
Here's Markel breaking free. He gets a right-hand layup. He coasts in there.
I was just focused on helping the team get the win, really. I wasn't worried about how I played.
Takes the three from the top. It is up. Good! And the door is closing on New York.
Woo! Welcome in. Hour number two. Getting off to an early start. Because things aren't moving like they're supposed to, but oh well, that's we kind of work with what we got. Michael Porter Jr. on Instagram yesterday announcing that he is moving on to the NBA. Two full games and 2 minutes in the regular season for Porter Jr. Missouri Executive Athletic Director Nick Jost joining the program yesterday, talking about ticket prices for football, butts in the seats, picks UConn. He was prescient in that one as UConn rolled yesterday over defending national champion South Carolina. The Lady Gamecocks falling by nearly 30, 29 points was the beatdown as Dangerfield ended quarter one, Westwood one. ESPN and NCAA.com with your women's basketball Elite Eight highlights. UConn in that first quarter, as the question was related to Dawn Staley, shot 68% overall and 90% from beyond three as they hung a 30 spot on South Carolina in the first quarter. Dawn's parting shot, talking about all is right with women's college basketball again because, the UConn Huskies are back in it again. Samuelson wrapping up with a four-point play, and you heard the comment in that one about, South Carolina just making mistakes, and they did. They made mistakes all night long, whether it was not closing out, whether it was failure to rotate on defense. It just was not a good night for them. South Carolina loses by 29. Meanwhile, Notre Dame, back-and-forth game most of the night with Oregon. 9 lead changes right up until 6:05 of the third quarter. And that was a go-ahead three by Mabry, and it put Notre Dame up 51-50. And Notre Dame never looked back after that one, going on for a 10-point win over Oregon. So left side of the bracket, for those of you who are left-right oriented as you look at your bracket, left side of the bracket, number one UConn, number one Notre Dame. Right side of your bracket, number one Mississippi State and number one Louisville. So all four number one seeds advance to the Final Four, which is, twice what the men did because you've got 2 1 seeds on the right-hand side of the bracket for the men. Alain Vigneault, the head coach for the New York Rangers, MSG, his young guys played well. Unfortunately, they continue to play well in losses. Martin Jones, NBC Sports California, San Jose Sharks. It wasn't a pretty win for them yesterday, but it was their 8th in a row, courtesy of Kevin LeBlanc. A goal in the shootout, 4-3 win for the Sharks, and the Sharks will play the St. Louis Blues tonight. Philadelphia 76ers Radio Network, Markel Fultz makes his return, and then he talked about it afterward. Just wanted to help out the team. You know how that one goes. And wrapping it up, the Hornets Radio Network, Kemba Walker, a 3-ball to put the lights out for the Charlotte Hornets as they go on for the victory. Hour number two, we're going to visit with Jarrett Sutton from the SEC Network. We're going to talk a lot of basketball and take a look at not just the women's but also the men's Final Fours as those will roll out this weekend. The men, courtesy of Westwood One, will be here on KFRU, KLIK, when you get action on Saturday night and then Monday night. The ladies, and they will be carried by ESPN, and you'll get that action on Friday, Sunday, as all of college basketball will wrap up, at least the action on the court will wrap up by about midnight or so on Monday evening with that national championship game. The ladies playing their national championship game in Columbus, Ohio. The men, well, they're down at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, and that is where they will, the cavernous confines down in San Antonio. Also tonight, you get the Blues hockey, 7 o'clock, the drop of the puck on that one, as the Blues will try to win for the sixth straight time, and in order to do that, they will need to stop the run of the San Jose Sharks, which is currently at 8 in a row. Major League Baseball will get things rolling officially on Thursday for both the Cardinals and for the Royals. The Royals, interesting box they find themselves in, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. We talked about it, rather, in hour number one with David Lesky, but we'll talk a lot more about it on Thursday as the regular season gets underway for both the Kansas City Royals. We'll also talk about Cardinals baseball. And, again, that the big concern right now for the St. Louis Cardinals isn't it's not your outfield, it's not your infield, it's your pitching staff. Losing Wainwright and not having Alex Reyes until probably mid to late May, and then you lose your closer in Luke Gregerson, the guy you brought in, and that puts just that much more weight on the closing staff as it is right now, because as they've already mentioned, you've got closer by committee, which, if you think about college football, when you have two quarterbacks, oh, we're going to rotate the quarterback, coach says. We're going to rotate the quarterback. We're going to take advantage of the situation with the quarterbacks we have. We're going to use them interchangeably. That means you have no quarterback. Well, when you have closure by committee, that generally means that you have no closer. Major League Baseball wrapping up spring training right now, going on. Seattle, Colorado, Cleveland, Arizona, Minnesota, Washington, all wrapping things up. Late game tonight, the Cardinals will take on the Toronto Blue Jays for the final time. That is set for a 6:07 start. And then the farm club for the Atlanta Braves will take on the parent club of the Braves at 6:35. Already in the books, Detroit beat Tampa Bay 2-1. Boston beating Chicago Cubs. They played that game at Fenway, by the way, 4-2. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh tied at 5. Canceled Cincinnati and Texas. Houston 8, Milwaukee 1. And this was a done after 7. But the Miami Marlins found somebody they could beat, and that happened to be the University of Miami in Florida, and that was a 22-2 final. No games on Wednesday, but Thursday, it all kicks off at 11:30 a.m., the Chicago Cubs and the Miami Marlins, Lester and Urena. That is an 11:30 a.m. Central Time start. And then you get the afternoon game with the Kansas City Royals opening things up at Kauffman. They are hosting the Chicago White Sox. That's a 3:15 start. You catch all the Royals action this year on 104.1, and that'll be home and away. And who knows? Might actually get some postseason. That could be really interesting. It'd be a wild card, but you could get some postseason. And right in the middle of that whole mess, you get the Cardinals at the Mets. That is a 12:10 start. That'll be Carlos Martinez, Noah Syndergaard, the Royals and the White Sox, James Shields, and Danny Duffy are going to be going at it in that one. Also, we got to get some congratulations out to the Missouri Women's Gymnastics Squad, as they are NCAA regional bound. They found that out late yesterday. The 22nd-ranked Tigers headed to Tuscaloosa next weekend. They got a bye, as they're the 4 seed, a total of 6 teams. The top seed is Alabama. They get to host Missouri's 4th straight regional appearance and the 28th overall in program history. Missouri baseball on the road Wednesday, midweek game against the Leathernecks of Western Illinois Wednesday afternoon. And then the Tigers will hit the road for Easter weekend down in Auburn. Missouri softball, as we talked about it in the first hour with head coach Gina Fogue. Boy, there's a rough weekend in Arkansas for the ladies. And now they have to bounce back. And they will be hosting LSU this weekend at the Missouri Softball Stadium. And that is the Easter weekend schedule for the Tigers. So it's a little bit different than normal as we wait for the internet to reply to our request, gentle though it may be. But Easter weekend schedule. So you're going to get a Friday game with number 10 LSU as the Tigers try to break a little bit of a slide here. That is a 3 o'clock start on Friday, doubleheader. And then you get another doubleheader on Saturday. You get a single game, rather, on Saturday. So doubleheader on Friday with LSU, and then a single game on Saturday. No game on Sunday, as typical when Missouri is hosting on Easter weekend. They do not play that Sunday, that Easter Sunday game. Meanwhile, the men's baseball team will get to play Easter Sunday down at Auburn as they take on the Auburn Tigers. Back to baseball, Major League Baseball, for just a second. Ahead of Jarrett Sutton here in this hour number two. If you're thinking about, all right, so who are the favorites for Major League Baseball World Series? Here are your three from the American League: Astros, Yankees, and Indians. On the National League side, the Dodgers, Nationals, and the Cubs. Those are your three favorites, both AL and NL. And they are picking, are the odds makers in Vegas, Astros, Dodgers World Series. Mike Trout is your odds-on favorite to be your American League MVP. And for the National League, your odds favorite is Bryce Harper. Cy Young, Max Scherzer is the favorite. And he's looking to be the first guy since Randy Johnson, back when he was with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Johnson won four consecutive Cy Young Awards. That was back in 1999-2002. But Max Scherzer looking to win three in a row. And he is the favorite in that. And Clayton Kershaw also in there as well. He is the second favorite. If you had to pick your top two, it is Scherzer, and then it is Kershaw. Meanwhile, for the American League, Corey Kluber and Chris Sale, your top two. Sale with the Red Sox, and Corey Kluber, he picked it up last year, so he is looking to go back-to-back. But Corey Kluber for the Cleveland Indians is one of the top two favorites in the American League for the Cy Young Award winner. So those award favorites already out, and you can check that out if you want to, or you can just go, you know what, zero faith in any of that. Stick with the Cardinals and the Royals, right? Cardinals and Royals open up the regular season on Thursday, and we'll have that full preview and the full coverage for you. Jarrett Sutton is going to join us next. We're going to talk some basketball, naturally, because Jarrett doesn't do a whole lot of baseball. But we're going to talk a lot of basketball coming up with Jarrett. We're looking at both the Final Four for both the men and the women, and we'll get into the legacy talk. So we'll do one segment with the Final Four for both the men and for the women. We'll take a quick little break, and then we'll come back with Jarrett, and we will talk about the legacy. And that is the legacy left behind by Michael Porter Jr. And is it something that you can already look at, put down on paper, and define? So Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network. He will join us next.
The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Hey, welcome back. It's, survive and advance to contact. And we have contacted our next guest, Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network, joining us here on The Closers. All right. How'd your bracket go, both men and women? You have everything intact? You picked them all right, correct?
Absolutely not.
All right.
Yeah, I'm all out. I will say my right side of the bracket in the men's tournament looks much better than the left side.
Okay.
I had my Sweet 16 right outside of Michigan State, but then it just kind of all went to crap in a handbasket real quick.
Yeah, kind of. My mind went pear-shaped right after Virginia decided to throw in the towel and did Arizona.
Right. No. I had Arizona in my national championship game.
I'm sorry.
Outside of my bracket, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still alive on that one because I have Villanova.
Yeah, I have Villanova alive, too. I had Duke beating Kansas, so And I had Duke win it at all. Mm-hmm. So that pretty much did it for my bracket.
Okay, were you a little bit, now I know you're a little bit more forgiving with basketball players, but knowing Grayson Allen's history, were you in that awkward position of you didn't like Grayson Allen, but you were still rooting for him because you hated Kansas worse?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I think how I would answer that is I would probably fall in that category. Grayson Allen last year was, I think, ultimately embarrassed himself and embarrassed Duke in a lot of ways. And you know, we made a big deal out of things that probably aren't necessarily all that big of a deal, but you just don't see it all the time. And the way he handled situations was really immature. And I am proud of Grayson that he grew up and developed this year. And he had a terrible weekend shooting the basketball. He was really bad in both games they played. And was bad against Kansas. Almost hit a great shot to end the game. But yeah, I was pulling for him to play well against Kansas. I was. I have to admit that.
Okay, what's the other storyline? I mean, Loyola Chicago obviously is the big storyline. But what's the one that you're really looking at here? Is it the job that Bill Self is doing with this Kansas basketball team that he called soft just 3 months ago?
Yeah, so I look at the storyline of this game. If you go back to 2008 when Kansas won the national championship, they had to get past Villanova to win it all that year. And then when Villanova wins the national championship a few years ago, they had to get past Kansas to get to win a national championship. And then here they are meeting with, in my opinion, the winner that wins this semifinal game is your national champion. The way this tournament has played out, you can't just give the title to the semifinal winner of Kansas Nova, with ultimately Michigan or Loyola, two very good opponents that wait you in the national championship game. But these two teams, Kansas and Villanova, are the best two teams that have been in this NCAA tournament by far. But if you look at the last 20 years, you look at Kansas winning in 08, UConn, Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, and Florida, they all have multiple national championships. And Kansas is in this blue blood conversation. And I know they finally got over that hump of winning an Elite Eight game. But, you know, if you're Kansas, you got to – it's all about national championships, right? And they got to get past Villanova, because if Villanova wins this game, that's two national championships in the last 3 years for Villanova and Jay Wright. And that is impressive. And Kansas, although they've won 14 straight Big 12s and they're in the NCAA tournament and they've been, a one seed 8 of the last 12 years, they still only have one title to show for it. So I think that's the storyline for me. Is Kansas-Villanova, there's a lot at stake for these two programs, which I think is making it such an intriguing matchup Saturday night, because the winner definitely has a chance to win it all in the national championship.
Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network, with us here on The Close. You can follow him on Twitter, at Jarrett T. Sutton. So, you know, you got your pick in there for the national championship game. Can Loyola of Chicago, as an 11 seed, get there? Do they have the not just the offense, but the defense to force Michigan into awkward positions to get into that championship game?
Well, they have Sister Jean, so that's a start. Okay. That's always a good start. But, you know, Coach Moser's done a terrific job. Porter Moser, you know, this Loyola Chicago team, wasn't that long ago, they were dead last in the Missouri Valley. And then here they are with a chance to win the national championship game, or get into the national championship game, I should say. And you look at their roster, they have five guys that average double figures. And when you look back at the Kansas State game, you know, Ben Richardson did not shoot the ball that well leading into the Elite Eight. He only averaged 7 points a game throughout the regular season. He steps up, hit 6 3. I think they're a team of destiny right now. I do. They remind me a lot of those Butler VCU teams where they're just so locked in and playing for each other. They're so unselfish. They trust each other. Their offense, I know they're not the most athletic team or they don't have the most size, but they're so quick and decisive, and they communicate and play defense better than any team I've seen thus far in the tournament, to where they absolutely shut down Kansas State half-court offense. Kansas State could do nothing against Loyola, and it was impressive. It was absolutely impressive to see how they guarded, how they communicated, how they hedged ball screens. They did not make hardly any mistakes on the defensive end, which is so tough to do in the game of basketball, to run a perfect slate on defense, and they did. They were fantastic. Mm-hmm. I look at their game against Michigan, though. I mean, Michigan has better athletes. They have NBA talent. They have guys that can stretch the floor and shoot it. So I do like Michigan in this game, but it would not surprise me if Loyola got past and got the title game.
Well, you know, if they get there, they're the first 11 seed to ever make it. All the other previous three have lost in the final four.
Yep. So, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Still sticking, though, with Jay Wright and the sharp-dressed man, right?
That's right.
You well-dressed guys all stick together, don't you?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. You know this. This is not a question. I like Jay Wright's the best. Outside of Mike Anderson, I got to give my guy Coach A a lot of love. He's a great dress coach, so but Jay Wright takes the cake.
Hmm. That might be something that we can look at next year. A field of 54 best dressed coaches.
I like that.
Yeah.
We can put our own bracket together.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
Obviously, Huggy Bear would be part of the play-in game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the pullover always has to make the bracket.
Yeah.
Somewhere. You got to have a
somewhere along that. Hey, let's switch over to the women's game. Missouri Tiger fans were probably looking at interest last night at the just absolute beatdown administered by UConn to South Carolina last night. And then, of course, Dawn has her parting shot with all is right with women's college basketball now. So she had, couldn't go away quietly. She just didn't bother going away. What's your take? All four teams, all ranked number one. So chalk goes. Is there any intrigue left in this final four for the ladies?
I mean, I think so a little bit. UConn's 36-0. We just absolutely smacked South Carolina, a 30-point win. And, they had five players in double figures and were great, as usual, as they've been all season. As far as headlines, I'm intrigued by by the Notre Dame Connecticut matchup. I think that'll be a good one. And Mississippi State taking care of business here in Kansas City, actually, which was great having the regional here in Kansas City at Sprint Center and a good turnout, I thought, as far as fans here in the Kansas City. I know Kansas City's in a bid to get a Final Four, so I was really interested in the region of Kansas City. Mississippi State gets a great win. I like their team, obviously. Tierra McCowan was outstanding, and Victoria Vivians has been good all year. Morgan Williams is a player that does not get – she's the most underrated player. Nobody gives her enough credit, in my opinion. So I like Mississippi State. I kind of am pulling for them. It's an SEC school, obviously, and I think I'm biased in that opinion. But I just like how their team plays defense. I love coaching. I love watching and even – just kind of breaking down how they execute defensively. I think it's really impressive what they do. And I think they could give UConn a run for their money. Ultimately, I like Mississippi State and UConn meeting in that national championship on Sunday.
Okay, yeah, because Mississippi State and Louisville have never met before ever. I mean, this is the first time ever meeting. So, I mean, no bigger stage than a Final Four. While on the other side of the bracket, you have the 48th meeting between UConn and Notre Dame. Now, while UConn owns that 36-11 advantage, Jarrett, how much does Notre Dame owning a 3-1 advantage in Final Four games play into this?
I think there's a little bit to be said for it. I think that that helps when you've had some experience and you've had some success against an opponent, especially, when you look at the Final Four and the national championship. It's the highest level, it's the biggest stage, and you want to have that success. I mean, that's why Notre Dame's a terrific program. They're 33-3 on the year. They beat a really good Oregon team to advance to the Final Four, and they do it with seven players, I believe it was, or maybe even six. But yeah, they do it with a limited bench. They do it with a limited rotation, and I think that's really impressive. They had three players play 40 minutes in that Elite Eight game. So I think that to me is still. I think there is definitely storyline. I know that we want to look at that women's tournament and UConn's had so much success and dominance, but I still go back to last year where UConn got knocked off. I thought that was a good moment. I thought that was a great moment, especially with the excitement and how that game finished when UConn got knocked out. I think that started to open the door a little bit to having more of an interest and more of an intrigue into the women's Final Four. And I still think that's the case this year. We'll see. UConn's the favorite, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's some interesting matchups there that there could be a chance for UConn to get knocked off.
All right, Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network with us here on The Closer. So, boy, you think, boy, man, I mean, that would – so you think Mississippi State's got enough in there to knock them off for the second straight year?
I'm not going to say that they are going to knock them off like they did last year, but I don't think it's a walk in the park for UConn. UConn's had just an easy kind of road to the Final Four, and I know what they did against South Carolina is extremely impressive. And I think that was a statement to the rest of the field. I think Mississippi State could give them a game. I still have UConn win it at all, but I think Mississippi State could give them at least somewhat of a game. And challenge them, but I know that that's tough to say with what they just did against South Carolina.
Yeah, and I know you said that Kansas City is in the line for hosting a Final Four. That's going to be probably in about 4 or 5 years. They're in that particular cycle, that 2020
yep.
and beyond
yep.
cycle. What did this weekend do for the hopes of that? Because a lot of it hinged on full arena and you know, basically the whole butts in the seats.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, the Kansas City Sports Commission wanted to probably see more fans. From what I saw and from people I know that were around Sprint, that the crowd was good. You know, I don't know if it will be enough, but it's good that the Kansas City's, you know, in that running. I know that, you know, I live downtown. I'm a block from the Sprint Center, and they did turn downtown into a great atmosphere for the women's program. I was out of town, but got filled in from a neighbor that said it was packed full of the respective teams, fan bases. They had pep rallies at Sprint Center, or at the Power and Light District right across the street from Sprint Center. And I think all of that ties into the experience. Anytime you're in the running for a Final Four, it's all about what's going on around that facility and in that town. So I thought Kansas City did well. I don't know if it'll be enough. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. I doubt it, especially when you look at other Final Fours for the women's program. You look at what happened in Dallas and other markets. There's some good crowds, but you know, I think Kansas City's right up there, and we'll see how it goes and how it plays out.
All righty. Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network. We'll take a quick little time out, and then shall we talk legacy?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. All righty. We will do that. Jarrett's what? I'm sorry. What? What?
I was just going to say, we're going to talk about, like, you know, your legacy. Is that where we're going?
No, or? Probably yours would probably be more pertinent to what all is happening. But I'm thinking some kid announced that he's going to the NBA yesterday, and he did so via Instagram. So I thought we would immediate do the, you know, the immediate hot take reaction to the legacy left behind.
Okay, I got
or
it.
Just the debris field.
I got it.
All righty. Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network. We'll be right back.
It's The Closers. Be part of the show now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to The Closers here. All right, so far so good. But we thought that in hour number one, and it got a little pear-shaped. Jarrett Sutton back with us here again on The Closers SEC Network. Again, find him on Twitter at Jarrett T. Sutton or at a Fines Men's Clothier. You can also find him there shopping for, you know, ties and a nice pair of shoes. So, all right. Legacies.
I said that's accurate. Well said.
Yeah. Well, listen, I like a good suit. I just don't wear them very often anymore, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Right. You know, Michael Porter Jr. yesterday, Jarrett, announces for the NBA. That wasn't a huge surprise for anybody. The stat line obviously was just 53 minutes and 30 points contribution to this Missouri Tiger team. And, I mean, if you look at it, you go, and they only went 1-2 in the three games that he played. But if you're looking at the immediacy of what legacy did he leave behind, as somebody who's followed the program and is invested in it as you are, what legacy did he leave behind as when you look at it?
Well, when I look at it, I mean, when he committed, this entire program changed, and he gave new life to a fan base. I mean, you look at Mizzou basketball over the last 4 years. I mean, the fans' support, I think, was dead. I mean, you look at the 3 years of constant losing, one of the worst teams in the Power Five, and then there was, you know, all this conversation when we hired Konzo Martin that Michael Porter Sr. was coming as one of his assistants. Next thing we know, Michael's committed. And then I thought the legacy that Michael Porter is probably going to leave behind is when he committed to Missouri, he started recruiting. He started reaching out to guys that he knew. We had Kevin Knox on the campus of Columbia looking at Missouri. That's all great for the program. That is terrific. And especially with what I think Michael did in getting Jeremiah Tillman to come to Missouri, a kid that's out of St. Louis. You see where Konzo has made a big impact already in 1 year on the recruiting trail, getting Torrance Watson, being in the conversation with Courtney Ramey. I think all of that is centered around Michael Porter committing to Missouri. And yes, Konzo Martin is a big part of that. I don't want to take anything away from him. But the fact that Michael commits, and Michael's going to be a lottery pick. And you know, when was the last time Missouri had a lottery pick that's going to have their name with Missouri next to it on the line this June when he's selected? And then Michael is going to continue to be a part of this program. He's going to come back. He's going to be invested. He's going to help in any way he can to help Konzo and the staff. And I think that, to me, is most important. It's not just about the 53 minutes and what he did this year and the injury. It's unfortunate. My heart breaks for Michael because when I saw him at Pro Day in November, he was absolutely fantastic. I thought he was going to run roughshod over all of college basketball. He was so impressive. The scouts and the NBA organization, every NBA team was there to watch him, and people were laughing about how good he was. And then he gets hurt. And I think that's what breaks my heart for him, is he wanted to wear a Missouri jersey. And to have the toughness and have the grit to come back and work your tail off and rehab and get yourself to 70% to play. I know Michael wasn't the Michael Porter that I saw in the fall. He wasn't as explosive in the tournament, and he didn't play well. And I feel bad for him, but I will say it says a lot about that kid to come back and play for Missouri, to play with his brother, play for his team. I wish he would have had a year at Missouri. I think that would have helped him a ton to develop, to grow, to get pushed by a coach, to get that real type of coaching from Konzo. That, to me, is where I really feel for Michael, because I know he wanted that. Mm-hmm. But I think his legacy is still going to be etched in stone in the future of what he's going to be able to help with the program, because we do have, you know, a guy like Jordan Clarkson who plays in the NBA and is a big name, Damari Carroll. But those guys were not at the caliber of what Michael's going to be in the NBA when he's healthy. And that, to me, is what the future is, knowing Michael's a Missouri raised kid. He's in Columbia. He's a known guy in the community. His family is. That, to me, says more about what the program is going to be in the future. I think that's when the legacy is going to be shown.
And you talk about the recruiting trail and how Michael's presence affects that for him. What about, you know, what does Jonte do? I mean, how much does Michael going to the NBA and declaring yesterday affect what Jonte does and the feedback that he's receiving?
You know, I think the difference, there's big differences between Michael and Jonte and their situation. I think Michael will still be a top five pick this summer. And I think a lot of NBA personnel and these organizations and scouts know about Michael and know what he's capable of. You know, I think people look at Jonte this fall. He reclassified. He wasn't ready yet. He had so much potential, and you saw it as the year played out into where he was, you know, a sixth man of the SEC and had a terrific year for a freshman. He's still not ready. And you look at Jonte, if he came out this year, he'd probably be at the end of that first round, mm-hmm. but he still wouldn't be ready. And he would be a draft and stash. He'd spend a lot of time in the G League. And the G League is a totally different experience. And I thought it was a big, big play from Daniel Gafford yesterday of Arkansas to say that he's coming back to Fayetteville. He's coming back for his sophomore season. And, you know, Daniel was right up there in the top 15, top 20. And Daniel was going to go before Jonte automatically. And so that, to me, is a statement to Jonte of, you look at 2018, there's a ton of bigs in this draft. You know, you got Robert Williams. You got Miles Bridges, you got Wendell Carter, you got Bamba, you got all these guys at the top that are solid. And I think, you know, Morris Wagner is one of those guys from Michigan too. I mean, he's a big, he's a stretch forward. He's similar to Jonte right now, but Jonte's not ready. He's not that level left, not at that level yet. So I hope he returns. I think that would be the best interest of his future, but it's ultimately his decision and what he wants to do moving forward.
Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network, with us here on The Closers. I see a couple of hours ago you responded to Jeff Goodman, Xavier commit Evan Boudreau, averaged 17.5 points, a grad transfer, 2 years remaining. You say Cassius Robertson says hi. If you're looking at that, if you're looking at that grad transfer market, Jarrett, I mean, how difficult is it to narrow in and hit another home run like the Tigers did with Cassius?
Man, I that's a great question. I don't even know if you can look at the grad transfer route and think, oh, we're going to get a player similar to Cassius, because, I mean, Cassius, when it's all said and done, looking back on his season, he's right up there in at the top or second, probably behind the kid from Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. I'm going blank on his name, but Cassius had ultimately one of the best grad transfer years of anybody we've seen in college basketball. It's going to be pretty tough to knock what Cassius did for Missouri, and I said it after the Florida State loss. You know, Missouri's going to miss Cassius a ton. Man, he was even good in the Florida State game. He was great. He was Missouri's best player. And the effort that he gave, the commitment, the work ethic that he instilled, a no-excuse type kid, tough, and completely took his game and transformed himself into a combo guard and not a shooter. And first-team All-SEC is pretty remarkable. Evan Boudreau would be a terrific get. He's a double-double. from Xavier. And man, if Konzo could lock in, that'd be great. But ultimately, Konzo's gonna go after guys that he wants to have fit his system and fit his program. And I think that's exciting for Mizzou fans because Konzo went out and found a guy like Cassius Robertson and knew what he was about, and boom, turned him into a great player and ultimately Missouri's best player and most important player throughout the season that got them ultimately in the NCAA tournament.
Xavier, Chris Mack going to Louisville. What does that do for the Louisville program that is has been dancing that fine line of NCAA sanctions for, well, quite some time?
Yeah, I mean, I said it this afternoon. All things considered, I don't know how much better Louisville could have come out of this situation when you look back on the NCAA sanctions and everything that took place with Rick Pitino and the coaching staff. And that's still playing out. You know, we're still going to figure out a lot, I think, once we get into the offseason and the summer, where this FBI investigation is going. I don't think it's over. And I think there's going to be some other coaches for sure named to this. So we'll see what happens. But hiring a guy like Chris Mack is terrific. And the fact that they got him for 7 years at $4 million per season, that's a win. That is worth every penny. Chris Mack is a terrific coach, a terrific person, great recruiter. And to leave Xavier, I think his wife is from Louisville. I think that's a big part of it. I think there was the tie-in there for Chris to go back to Louisville. And it's a good job. It's a good position to be at. Obviously, Louisville is right up there as a blue blood, and Chris Mack has earned that. I was surprised to see him leave Xavier because I know how much he loves that campus and loves that program. And man, what a terrific job he did there. And I think he's taking this as a leap and trying to bring Louisville back. Every coach in America wants to take over a program and bring it out of the shadows and bring it out of a tough situation, similar to what Konzo did at Missouri. Every coach has that inside them to take over a program and bring it back to where it should be. And I think that's the intrigue that Chris Mack had to go to Louisville.
And last question as we wrap up this particular segment, talking about legacies. What the heck happened to Tubby Smith?
Man, that whole Memphis situation is rather embarrassing.
I mean, you even go back before that, Jared, to you know, him being brought into Kentucky, gets him a national championship, and they run him out of town there. He goes to Minnesota, and Minnesota down to Tech, and then from Tech to Memphis.
Yeah, well, I will say that I'm happy for Tubby that he's taken a job at his alma mater, mm-hmm. High Point. You know, barring, I know that there was a lot of negotiation going on there. But I heard for Tubby in what took place in Memphis. I don't think that was handled professionally at all. Tubby's a respected coach. He's very much liked in the coaching circles. And for everything to play out the way it did, it reminded me of the Tennessee football situation, not to that extent, but just in the public eye and Tubby's attorneys getting involved and everything surrounding Penny and all the situation with the AAU circuit and him taking the Memphis job. We'll see how it plays out, but I thought for a guy that like Tubby Smith to get fired after a 2-year stint where he did a great job and really brought his team into I think a good place and winning 20 plus games, to get fired the way he got fired, I think is very hard to take for a coach, and I thought a little bit unprofessional, but I'm happy he found a job, and especially at his alma mater at High Point, I think he'll do a great job there.
Yeah, Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Jarrett T. Sutton. All right, what's next for you? I mean, the basketball season has less than 5 days remaining, and then it's all done except for the recruiting trail. So what's next for you?
Yeah, so for me, I called the NAI National Championship. Mm-hmm. It was a great way to end kind of the broadcast part of my year.
Called it, by the way.
It was a great game,
by the way. Yeah.
Down to the wire, buzzer beater. It was fantastic, mm-hmm. and it felt like Hoosiers in Municipal Auditorium, but it was a great experience. I flipped the script. I get ready for the draft.
Yeah.
I'll be in Chicago in May. I'll be on the floor with a lot of team trainers and athletic physicians, and I'm really looking forward to that. It's the first time I'll be on the floor for the entire NBA combine. So I'm looking forward to that, and then we'll gear up for the draft.
All righty. So we have draft talk to talk about, so I guess we'll be in touch for that one then.
Absolutely. And it's going to be a good draft, too. It's a stacked class.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good talent. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And then once those ping pong balls bounce around and that lottery comes into full effect and some trades start throwing around there, I'm sure Danny Ainge will get involved in some way, somehow. So it should be a lot of fun.
Well, you know, they have assets. That's what I keep hearing. They have assets.
Don't they all? Don't they always have assets? Do they not have assets?
Oh, my God. It seems like they do. Seems like they certainly do. All right, well, I guess we'll touch base next Tuesday, wrap up the college basketball season, and kind of wait and see what happens with the draft.
All right, thanks, George. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you. Jarrett Sutton, SEC Network. You follow him again on Twitter, at Jarrett T. Sutton. We're going to be back, and we're going to wrap up the hour, and we will do that, hopefully, right after this.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back. We survived most of that hour. Thanks to Jarrett Sutton for joining us here in hour number two. Also, hour number one, you had David Leske from Baseball Prospectus Kansas City. You follow him on Twitter at DB Leske. And Missouri softball coach Gina Fogg. That stuff will be up on the podcast in a little bit later on. So if you missed any of it or you want to go back and review something that was said, feel free to go ahead and do so. Nick Jost was on yesterday, and his podcast page is already up. It's hour number two of the Monday edition of The Closer. So check it out at KFRU.com, KLIK1240.com. NFL has been busy, as has college basketball. We talked about Chris Mack going from Xavier to Louisville, 7-year deal. Also, Pitt today has hired Duke's assistant Jeff Capel as their coach. It was a rather awkward run for a couple of years there in between coaches. Meanwhile, the NFL, I mentioned they've been busy. You've got the Rules Committee has been meeting, so a couple of things coming out of that one. One, I don't know if this is going to help us or not, but the NFL owners have approved a new catch rule. It says simplified. We shall see. And the catch rule will eliminate the requirement to maintain control of the ball throughout the process of going to the ground. Instead, here's your three-step process for that which is now a catch in the NFL. One, receiver must control the ball. Two, receiver must establish himself in bounds. And three, A, perform a football move such as taking a third step or lunging with the ball in hand. Seems simple enough right now. We shall see if that actually comes to fruition. But you think about, I mean, the original catch rule was the Calvin Johnson rule. That was basically how it was termed. And then you had Dez Bryant back in 2014. It was ruled not a catch. He said he was reaching for the end zone when the ball came loose and rolled out of bounds. Well, now that would have been ruled a catch, and Dallas would have retained possession were that ball exited the field of play. So that could be interesting. And if you remember in the December, well, you may or may not, but it was December Steelers and Patriots when Jesse James had a touchdown that was overruled. That would actually have given Pittsburgh the win, but it was a touchdown that was overruled because James did not, quote, survive contact with the ground. Therefore, the touchdown was overturned. So you've got that one. I think we're getting closer and closer to kickoffs, not seeing kickoffs. They are now making permanent the temporary rule that put touchbacks after kickoffs at the 25-yard line. So now if you get the touchback, you get that thing kicked, you get the ball back at the 25-yard line. And here's the flip side of this, and you've seen this develop not just in the NFL game but also in the collegiate game, is the shorter kick, kicking it like between the 5, that 3 to 7 yard line area, allowing for the return and hoping that your return team gets down there and makes a tackle inside the 20. So that will be an interesting one. And to counter that, I think it was the NFL or the NCAA is experimenting with a rule that would say that, hey, if you take a knee, you fair catch it, you get the ball at 25-yard line. And also the other rule, it is a possible ejection, but definitely a 15-yard hit or penalty if you lead with the helmet. The crown of the helmet is not an option for you out there. So if you lead with the crown of the helmet, 15-yard penalty and possible ejection from the game. Thanks for your patience today. We certainly do appreciate it. I will try better tomorrow, and I'll try better tomorrow morning, as I'll be back in the chair again tomorrow morning. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, please be careful out there.
40 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.